as we go into the world of the haters.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I don't know what happened between Patrick Beverly and Chris Paul, but it is not cool between the two of them.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
CP can't guard nobody, man. What we call him? Cone.
The Rich Eisen Show.
What does the cone do?
Stay still.
Exactly.
Earlier on the show, CBS sports broadcaster Jim Nantz, basketball Hall of Famer Chris Bosh, host of the Greenlight Podcast, Chris Long, coming up, author Alan Shipnuck. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
All right, hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air here on the program. What great chats we've had so far with Chris Long, talking some football and talking life with him and Chris Bosh. That was such a great conversation in hour number two to kick things off of the NBA Conference Finals tier that gets kicked off tonight with the Eastern Conference Finals between the Celtics and also the Heat. Went down memory lane there.
What do you got in this series, Rich? What do you think happened?
I don't know, man. I thought your C's were in trouble.
Yeah, I thought so too.
But, you know, but they beat the team that, you know, that had Giannis. And now here comes the Heat, a team that, you know, I didn't think needed to break themselves up for Giannis.
I'm worried about coming out slow tonight. That was a pretty physical.
Well, Marcus Smart might not play.
Yeah, he's got a swollen foot right now. But Lowry's out, so the flop-a-thon will be delayed for like a game or two.
Oh, very good. That's I mean, that's your opinion on that.
Two of the biggest floppers in basketball, well, I can admit.
If you missed the coverage of the Rich Eisen Show coverage of the NBA draft lottery that goes down tonight, go to our YouTube page. I think I'm very proud of it. Very, very proud of it.
As we should be. Yeah. And be nominated for a reason.
No, anytime that we get the chance to say the words Anderson Varejão on the program, we will proudly take that opportunity. He's representing the Cavs tonight, who have a 0.5% chance, the dumb and dumber chance tonight. Get the first overall selection in the NBA draft lottery.
Let's go.
So that goes down tonight. We also chatted in hour number one with Jim Nantz. Again, 0 years old that I knew that Jim Nantz and Austin Ekeler shared the same birthday. Also, happy birthday to the Mattrel.
Matt Ryan.
It's his birthday today as well. Jim Nantz was heading off to Tulsa, Oklahoma. He's calling the PGA Championship. Won last year by Phil Mickelson. As we all know, he is not there this time around, and one of the many reasons why he is not there is a quote that was published in the new book, Phil, by our friend back here on the Rich Eisen Show on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line, the man who wrote this book, a fascinating tome, joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show, none other than Alan Shipnuck. How you doing, Alan?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Happy to be back.
Good. Glad to have you back. Are you in Tulsa right now? Are you there?
Yep. Yes, I'm on the grounds of Southern Hills Country Club, very stately golden age design. It's going to be one hell of a venue for this tournament, and I'm excited to be here.
Well, let's get right into it, Alan. You know, your book, Phil, the rip-roaring and unauthorized biography of golf's most colorful superstar, is a fascinating read, man, and you just jump right into it by collecting some of the best Phil stories from so many different people from the world of golf and also sports as well. I didn't, you know, think that Tom Candiotti would be the first guy that you would quote have a Phil story to start the book, but obviously Phil has been there and done that. So what do you make of the fact that Phil is not there this week, Alan?
I mean, it's a bummer for all of us. We love watching Phil play the game, and you know, last year's PGA was a transcendent performance and really put an exclamation point on an incredible career. And but the ground has shifted beneath his feet, and I think that Phil is just buying some time to figure out his next move. You know, he's caught between two worlds with the PGA Tour and this new Saudi venture, and he's been heavily involved in the creation of the Saudi league, even as he, you know, the tour has been this tremendous platform for him to build his brand and over the last three decades. And, you know, he went from a fan favorite to kind of a heel turn and a little bit of a bad guy. And I know that's got to be disorienting for Phil. So he just wasn't ready to return to public life and answer the hard questions and have to declare his allegiance to one tour or the other. So it's pretty clear that the Saudis and the PGA Tour are going to wind up in court. And that's the future of that is undetermined. And I think Phil just wants to be on the sidelines a bit longer and see how it's all going to play out.
Well, I don't know, I guess, where to start is, you know, because obviously the quote that is in your book that you published in the Fire Pit Collective a couple of months ago that led to your previous appearance here, Greg Norman came out last week and talk about sports washing. I mean, he treated what the Saudi government and everything in the real world that Phil talked about in stark honesty. He talked about it like, you know, you got to move on. And he treated it like a missed 5-foot putt, you know, Greg Norman. How come Phil's getting so much grief for stuff that Greg Norman appears to not?
Yeah, I mean, there is an element of hypocrisy in all this, because many players have gone over to Saudi Arabia over the last 5 years and taken money from the Saudis in appearance fees and then this European PGA Tour event that's played annually. And they've skated. There's a script. And if you stay on script, you're going to be okay, where you just say, I'm here to grow the game, and we're bringing golf to people who haven't seen it, and it's a great vehicle for bettering oneself, and I'm an athlete, not a politician. Everybody rolls their eyes. They know it's BS, and they're just there for the money. But if you stay on script, you can get away with it. Phil said the quiet parts out loud, and he was so blunt, and he was so callous in dismissing the Saudi atrocities. And he, you know, he also was very, you know, for him to admit, you know, kind of the sneaky backroom dealings against his home tour, that was a big deal as well. So I think it was the double whammy of Phil being too honest and the fact that he's really in some ways been subverting his home tour. That's why people are outraged. And let's face it, I mean, Phil Mickelson is a huge star. Like, Lee Westwood in some ways has become the face of the Saudi Golf League, but he doesn't inspire emotion the way that Phil does. He's not a global figure. I mean, Phil has been one of the best golfers in the world for more than 3 decades. It is unparalleled longevity in any sport. And so what he says just carries more weight, and he's always been a lightning rod. He's always been polarizing. And this is just another controversy in your career that's been full of them.
So what is the future of it? You said that there's a court case coming up, and Phil's waiting to see how everything lands before he reemerges. Is that the scoop?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it hasn't been filed yet, but the golfers like to call themselves independent contractors, but they're really not, because when you sign up as a member of the PGA Tour, which makes you eligible for all these humongous bonus programs and the best pension program in sports, if you want to play in a competing event on another tour that's opposite a PGA Tour event, you have to get permission from the tour. And there's always been a little bit of a dance where sometimes the tour will extract some promises like, okay, you can do that, but you have to play these tournaments over the next few years. And it's always been bothersome to the players, but they accept it because the rewards of tour membership are so great. A bunch of players applied for releases to go play the first Saudi event next month, and the tour took a very hard line and said no. And so now it's one of the big questions in the sport. Who's going to break the blockade? Who's going to go over there and play anyway? And they will likely get suspended by the tour, and then there'll be a lawsuit on antitrust reasons. Can the PGA Tour really restrict these players, who are independent contractors in theory, from playing other tours? And that's why this is such an explosive issue in golf, because it can reshape the entire landscape of the professional game. And it could be a seismic shift in how each of these tours conducts their business. And so there is a heck of a lot at stake for the tours, their sponsors, the players, and every other stakeholder in the game. And so that's why the players have been so upset with Phil. It's not about morality. It's not about human rights. It's that he's doing things that could impact them business-wise. Like, he could be taking money out of their pocket. Because if you're a tour member and this competing Saudi circuit becomes successful, and it starts attracting, you know, blue chip corporate sponsorship and TV contracts, that's money that's getting siphoned away from the PGA Tour. And now a person to start falling, you're playing for less money, and the superstars might benefit because those are the ones who are being courted by the Saudis. But if you're kind of a rank and file tour member, this could directly impact your livelihood. So the criticism that that Phil came under from his colleague, it wasn't really because they're upset that he's you know, negotiating with these bad actors on the world stage, because it could affect their pocketbook.
Alan Shipnuck, the author of Phil, the rip-roaring and unauthorized biography of golf's most colorful superstar, calling into the Rich Eisen show here. So who you know, obviously we know how the Saudi league would be funded and how Greg Norman is at the forefront of it. Who's televising it? Like, where would we see it if it happens? Like, where would that happen?
Right now, nobody. They're scrambling to try and get TV and or streaming for this first event in June that's being played outside of London. And somebody may take them up on the offer, but that's a piece of the puzzle they haven't figured out. And you know, the Saudis are playing the long game. They have unlimited resources, so It's been a little bit of a dumpster fire to start here. They haven't gotten the big name players they'd hoped. They haven't secured the TV. But the insidious thing about sports washing is that it works, because if they can just get this thing launched, all of a sudden you're going to have some B-list pro is going to go over there, and he's playing for $25 million while the competing PGA Tour event, the purse is $8 million. And this is a guy you beat every week, and now all of a sudden he's going to win $4 million for 3 days of work. There's going to be a lot of established pros who decide they want to get in on that action. And so I think the Saudis know that if they can just get this circuit launched and maybe prevail in court, that in year two they're going to get bigger and better players, and in year three it'll just continue, because you can only express your moral outrage so many times, and then it gets tiresome and people tune you out. And that's why sports washing works, because people just at some point throw up their hands and say, okay, I guess the Saudis have now bought their way into professional golf, like they have Formula One, like they have the EPL, they have big time darts and snooker contests over there. Like, they will do anything they can to launder their reputation by bringing big time events, and it works. That's the problem. So they're not going away. I mean, they have unlimited resources and they have time on their side.
Well, it's affected the current state of golf already, in the fact that the reigning PGA champ, after one of the most endearing and exciting championships, is not there. I mean, again, I can't believe it's been a year, when I just remember we were all coming out of a lot of quarantines and just seeing Phil being surrounded and Brooks Koepka being jostled with that surgically repaired knee by a bunch of patrons, to use the Masters phrase, just surrounding Phil with his big aviators and flashing the grin and the thumbs up, and he's not there. So what is the general sense of things at Southern Hills a couple days before the first ball flies?
Yeah, there's a void here. I mean, that really was a defining performance by Phil. And there's a sense of disbelief. You know, whether Phil was suspended or took a voluntary leave, it's pretty clear that's just semantics. I mean, the PGA Tour put him on ice. But it was now been 90 days since those first comments. And 90 days has been the typical length of a serious PGA Tour suspension in the past. Even though they don't talk about these things publicly, it's like the Kremlin. But enough information is leaked out. We know how they handle their business. It would have been wildly excessive to suspend Phil for longer than that. He didn't break any laws. Now, he did violate some unwritten rules, and he did violate the player handbook, which says you can't work against the business interests of the tour. But ultimately, he's been squeaky clean from a tour standpoint. This is his first major offense. Like, if Phil had wanted to play this PGA championship, he would be here. Because the PGA of America is not the PGA Tour. They're different organizations. And the PGA of America, which runs the tournament, does not have to abide by anything the tour says. Phil's defending champ. He's exempt in the field. They would never have barred him, the PGA of America, from playing in their own tournament. And it would have been a ratings bonanza, his return to the public, you know, domain. So I think this was Phil's choice. And I think it tells you that he's just not ready to face the tough questions. He's not ready to declare his allegiance, and he's still kind of game planning the best way to return to public life.
Any communication between you and Phil in the last 90 days, Alan?
After the excerpt dropped, he sent me a text in which he expressed his displeasure, and I wrote him back, he didn't respond, and then subsequently went back to him. The text never went through, and talking to other people, theirs aren't going through, so it's pretty clear he changed his number. But I did send him a copy of the book weeks ago with a handwritten note, and you know, I wanted him to see what was in it before the public, and if he was worried about coming back this week in case there was going to be any other earthquakes, I wanted him to see it was a very fair and balanced book. It was actually written with a good amount of affection, because I've always enjoyed writing about Phil and being in his, you know, I'm watching him do his thing and being in his orbit. And so, you know, and I said that in my note to him. I have not gotten a critique on the book from him yet, so that may be forthcoming. But, you know, he's in San Diego. He's playing golf every day. I've had people sending me photos and videos of him at Rancho Santa Fe Golf Club and the Bridges and the Farms, like all these private courses in the San Diego area. And his swing looks good. You know, it looks like he's put on a little bit of weight, which is fine. He's got a little bit of a beard, but he's coming back to the game. But that doesn't mean he's ready to return to public life. So it's going to be fascinating, his next move. And, you know, there's some real milestones. You know, the first is the Saudi event in early June. The week after is the U.S. Open, which we all know is, you know, an annual psychodrama for Phil. It's the missing piece of the career Grand Slam. And he was out of the field until he won the PGA Championship. Now he has a five-year exemption to try and get that last crown jewel, right? And if he skips the U.S. Open when he's exempt into the field, you know that this self-imposed exile is serious. But, again, I think right now he's just buying time, and he's waiting to see how things are going to play out with the Saudis, and he's waiting to see if other players are gonna be the first one out of the bunker or to try and test the tour's resolve. And the landscape is changing rapidly, and Phil's caught in the middle of all of it, and he's just buying himself some more time.
Well, I guess one of the ways, Alan, to change the narrative, if you are running the PGA Championship, is to put Tiger, McIlroy, and Spieth together right out of the box to start things off on Thursday and have them play together for 2 days. How do you think Phil's going to look at that and let that sink in over the next couple of days, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there'll be some FOMO. You know, he loves the big stage. He's a showman, and he thrives on the energy of the crowd. And nobody's signed more autographs than Phil Mickelson over the last three decades. So he likes to feel that love, and I think it's gonna be very bittersweet for him. But you know, it's just Phil has he's created this mess with his, you know, the secret dealings with the Saudis, and now it's just gonna have to play out. So, but yeah, I'm sure it's gonna be hard for him not to be here. And it's honestly a great golf course for him, the way they've set it up with, instead of long, tangly rough around the greens, it's shaved down, swales, and you really need a lot of touch and imagination and short game talent. And it would have been great to watch Phil, you know, try and navigate this course. And so, yeah, if he tunes in and he sees those three guys out there, knowing that he probably should have been in that group, but it's going to be very bittersweet for him.
Well, congrats on your book. Again, just as an example of you pointing out that you know, it was written with a level of endearment. Just that first chapter, I don't want to give too much away, with you just unloading everybody's favorite Phil story. I was waiting for it to turn at some point to, you know, the stories of a guy with a great sense of humor and then a huge heart talking to people who's, you know, dealing with cancer and things like that. Just a story where he would be an a-hole, and it doesn't happen. Like, you don't have it in there, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, as I said, like, my goal was always to write a really fair, balanced book. And because of some of the, you know, there's been all this energy around the excerpts and some of the juicy bits, I mean, I enjoyed writing about Phil's virtues, and he's done a lot of great things in his life, and he touched a lot of people, and that's all in the book too. And it was not my intention or my job to legislate how people should feel about Phil. I just tried to present as comprehensively as I could this really big, complicated life, and people will take from it what they will. And I tried to stay out of the way of the story, but yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that, because people said, is this a takedown of Phil? You know, it was never intended to be that. And, you know, some of the blowback and some of these repercussions that have come out of the things he told me, I knew it was going to provoke controversy. I never imagined it would send him into exile. And, you know, Phil talked his way out of many controversies in the past. And I assumed he would do the same thing. But I think he wildly underestimated the emotion around Saudi Arabia, which did supply 15 of the 19 9/11 hijackers. And, you know, they did assassinate a Washington Post reporter who was a resident of the United States. And Phil thought he was being a cagey businessman and was engaging in these hardball negotiations. But I don't think he estimated, well, I know he didn't, that the emotional reaction, that he was in league with the Saudis. And so he made some fundamental miscalculations. But there is a road back for Phil. I mean, Tiger Woods has never been more beloved than he is at this moment, despite his scandals. And Phil can feel that love again as well. But what he decides on the Saudi question is going to be fundamental, because if he goes all in with them after all the things he says and us knowing his true feelings, it's going to be hard for a lot of golf fans to forgive him. And so that's why I think he's taking a little extra time to make that decision, because it's really going to define this last act of his career.
Alan, thanks for the time. Enjoy the walk there. It's Southern Hills, and let's have you back on soon as this develops. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a great conversation, Rich.
Thank you. Right back at you. That's Alan Shipnuck, the author, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. I'll just give you one example. Again, the book sucks you right in. Oh, one story after another. Here's out of all, I mean, there's about 50 of them that start, it feels like.
Yeah.
Here's the one I enjoyed the most, from Brant Snedeker. I'll read it to you real quick. It's just one quick quote. Right after Phil won the British Open in 2013, the tour was in Akron. Okay. Which I know, that's the Hall of Fame.
Been to that.
Okay?
Great event.
On Tuesday night, I'm driving to dinner and a stoplight. Phil pulls up next to me. What are the chances, right? We roll down the windows and he yells, "Hey, buddy, where are you going to dinner?" I told him I was meeting some people. He asks if I want to join him, but I say I can't. He's like, "That's too bad, because we're going to be drinking something special out of this." He starts waving around the claret jug, smashes the gas, and then takes off. I'm sitting there shaking my head and laughing like, man, you can't make this stuff up. We'll take a break right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Joe Burrow has spoken.
Joe Cool.
Yes, indeed. Ooh. He has spoken today, and so much more to still to come right here on this edition of the Rich Eisen Show, including Del Tufo's real brother. Blue check mark coming up. Hey, folks, it's time for the NFL draft, which means for me, I need a good night's sleep, because if I don't have one, I'm just not myself. You know the deal. You know exactly how important it is to have quality sleep. It's a game changer for all of us. So Sleep Number helps me. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's setting is 70. We both get a great night's sleep because we could adjust the firmness of our mattress on each side. Improve your quality sleep, because Sleep Number learns how you sleep thanks to their smart beds and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
844-204-RICH, number to dial. Our friends at Callaway want to remind you, because when you start watching big-time tournaments like this PGA tournament, we've had Jim Nance on now and Alan Shipnuck, and they both said how beautiful this course is going to look like, right? And you're just going to want to go out and play golf, and Callaway has got the stick that has been built to completely bomb it. It is the new Rogue ST driver that's been speed-tuned to be Callaway's fastest, most stable driver ever. There's four different types. There is one that suits your game, I guarantee you. Certainly, since there's one, the Max, that is a combination of incredible combination of distance and forgiveness. So that really is kind of an omnibus stick, if you will. There's one that's a dedicated draw model, the Max D. There's one with a stronger trajectory, more neutral ball flight, the Max LS. The Rogue ST Triple Diamond LS is the compact low spin head that the tour players love. So John Rahm and the rest of them that get out there from Team Callaway. You're going to see him. You're going to probably see him out. Yeah, John Rahm's your guy,
that's
right? You
guy,
took
TMG.
Xander Schauffele, Christopher. You take him? Who'd you take?
Yeah, I took Xander Schauffele. I have Sam Burns. Like, let's go, fellas.
Here we
Come
go.
On now.
Go to our Twitter handle later on today to see how we all drafted players for the Rich Eisen Show putting contest eventually that we'll finish up when the major season's all over. In the meantime, just go to CallawayGolf.com/GoRogue to find your Rogue ST driver for you. Joe Burrow has spoken. Joe Burrow has spoken. We spoke to Jim Nance earlier today. We talked to Jim about all. Jim? We talked about it, Jim. We talked about it with Jim. The number of games on the CBS schedule that are deemed notable, that have the Bengals B on it. Significant games. Significant. Bengals at Cowboys, Chiefs at Bengals, Bengals at Bucks, Bengals at Patriots, Bengals at Titans. That's just five right there. Amazon has a Thursday night game. Bengals and Dolphins, Tua and Burrow, like we're back in college again with our boy Blue. Triple Lindying back to school. It's because the Bengals are an outstanding team that went to the Super Bowl and then went about fixing their problem on the offensive line in free agency and then just drafted just to fine-tune things. When was the last time the Bengals fine-tuned things? You know what? We just fine-tune things.
It's been a long time.
Which is kind of what Joe Burrow said about his game. All right. Joe Cool, by the way, showed up, I believe, in his uniform, in his jersey. So it's not like he's in some pumpkin
tiger coat or something.
He's not in some sort of pumpkin three-button. That's, by the way, long-distance cousin of Johnny Two Times, is Pumpkin Three Button.
Go get the pumpkin.
All right, here's what Joe had to say to me.
This is my first offseason in the NFL, so I've been able to take advantage of that with as far as my body and my throwing and my mind and all that. It's been, obviously I've been grinding, but it's also been relaxing, not have to worry about, am I going to be ready for the season? I can just focus on getting my body right, making sure I'm healthy, and then relaxing.
Last offseason, it was rehab, and it was the deep ball. What's your main thing you're focused on improving this offseason?
Really, it's just my entire game at this point. I'm tweaking little things here and there. At this point, I'm not going to have a big overhaul of anything that I'm doing. I'm just looking to refine my entire game as a whole.
I mean, when was the last time the Bengals were just fine-tuning and tweaking? That's all we're doing.
82?
Honestly.
Yeah, I mean.
Ken Anderson is
he's the personification of what's happening. Normally, as he said, not an overhaul. Normally, that's the off-season word for the Bengals. It's either an overhaul or the fans were demanding one from an obstinate owner that wouldn't do it. Whether it was the wrong coach or the wrong roster or the wrong quarterback. Some stubborn guy whose dad created the team.
No, I mean, that helps.
Right? Whose dad's like, by the way, kids, they call the Cleveland Browns not because they like the color.
Right.
And the jungle, they're just old school. They were called the jungle, but they still don't have. Do they have a deal for the stadium?
Bengals?
Yeah.
No. Paul Brown Stadium.
Right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it?
I don't know. Look it up. They might have finally gotten keeping up with the Joneses figuratively and literally.
Nope. Paul Brown Stadium.
There you go.
Yeah.
And so that's how stubborn this guy is.
He doesn't want $20 million.
Mike Brown, in the first owner's meeting I ever went to, they voted, this is how long ago it was, 2004. NFL Network started November of 2003. We were at the Breakers. In 2004, They voted on making instant replay permanent. That's how long I've been around. That was the big thing at that owner's meeting, making instant replay permanent. I remember Charlie Casserly was on the competition committee. He told the owners, hey, everybody's going to have some big, huge 4K, you know, big 3K or whatever it was at the time, screen at home, high-definition screen at home. They're seeing it at home. We might as well have it in our game. Everybody's seeing it. It's kind of worked.
You have to do it in Charlie's voice, though, Rich.
See here? You got this big television here, and you got a football there, and you got a foot there.
And they're going to see it, and we're going to see it.
And you got some Jamoke sitting at home. He's seeing it there. We're not going to see it because you don't want it. And all the owners. One said, I abstain. Guess who that was? Al Davis.
Yeah.
And another owner said, no. Mike Brown said, no. Like, we're sliding down the back of the dinosaur at the end of the workday. Using our feet to move our car. That guy.
Flintstone.
Now has a quarterback who personifies them. Tweaking. Fine-tuning. Not an overhaul. And we're all sitting here believing it. Joseph Burrow, everybody. Joey from Athens, Ohio. The Cincinnati savior. And he's so cool about it, too. Yeah, you know what? It's my first offseason, really, because, you know,
that thing happened.
I got drafted, and there was that pandemic thing. And then, you know, I blew out my knee thing. And then I took him to the Super Bowl, and we're just fine-tuning around here. And we're like, is that the Bengals quarterback? Yeah, it is. Whoa. Yes, it is. Now then, while we're talking about things that you can't believe, earlier on the program, previously on the Rich Eisen Show, Mike Del Tufo made it. Previously on this program, I forced Mike to take public a claim that he has made to all of us off camera, off air.
You said it
happened so long ago. There's only a few human beings that can confirm it.
Yes.
Okay. Well, now you're telling me we can't say what it is yet because you told your brother to call in and you did not give him
a knucklehead in the back.
You didn't give him a frame of reference?
I told him not to lead the
witness. Okay, you said have Frank call in.
Exactly.
And we had some Fugazi Frank call in from Chicago and we told him to pound sand, get out of here.
Exactly.
Who do you think you are?
I mean,
no, there's only one Frank Del Tufo and he's on the show right now. What's up, Frank?
How are you guys doing today?
What up, Frank? We're doing great, Frank.
Sounds just like Mike.
It does sound like. By the way, Hoskins, you got to keep a mic on camera to make sure he's not throwing his voice, that this literally is two different people with the last name of Del Tufo. Frank, do you have any idea why you're calling into the show right now?
I do not. I actually asked him, but he said I can't really give you any information because I don't want to lead me, because remember last time you questioned me, he tried to lead me into the question.
So. Understood. Okay. All right, Frank Del Tufo. Mike Del Tufo, who I believe you know intimately in a long time. Mike claims the following, that back in his running days, his track days, where he had a six-pack and he was really a fast guy, that he had enough speed that given a slight head start, Lawrence Taylor himself did not run him down. Frank, your thoughts.
I'm trying to think, Rich, to be completely honest. I hate to say it. I really don't remember that.
No. He's thinking you said I raced Lawrence Taylor. That's what he's thinking you said.
Oh, no.
He said.
That's exactly what I thought.
That he was so fast as a kid that if he raced Lawrence Taylor and got a few feet head start, Lawrence Taylor would not have been able to catch him. He was that fast. Yay or nay?
Not even after a night of Mexican food, Rich. No chance.
Are you serious, Frank?
I Mike was fast, but, I mean, LT was pretty fast, too.
So he's taking your side.
I would have to say that if they were in the forest or the Sahara Desert somewhere, that Lawrence was going to be eating a good meal after he caught Mike.
Like the Serengeti, like one of those one of those Wild Kingdom shows where we watched watched Darwinism Perkins. At work. Is what you're
like
saying?
Like on the safari ride in Disney World, Mike would have been dead.
Lawrence Taylor and Ray Perkins, not Marlon Perkins, but okay, yeah. Very good, sir. Mike, you're very disappointed in your brother right now.
Well, because he didn't answer. I mean, you asked him the wrong thing first.
What do you mean?
It was like, yeah.
Excuse me.
No.
Excuse me.
What? He didn't run cross country with me. Frank never ran with me.
But you offered him up as the testimonial.
He's giving you proof that I ran, and I was. He actually said I was fast. That's not, no. You guys still have not won this court case.
Wait, time out. What did Lawrence Taylor run the 40 in?
That's what we need to find out.
About 4.6. I looked it up.
Yeah.
Mike, we could have used the sundial for you, pal.
Oh, he's such a liar.
My brother Frank.
See, this is why. I hate my brother.
My brother Frank.
Frank Del Tufo.
Ooh, what happened to your mic? Rich. Uh-oh.
Oh, Rich's mic went out.
I'm back.
Oh, I'm back.
Say hi to your brother for me. Frank, thank you for the call.
Good
appreciate
job,
it.
See you next week, Frank.
Hey, see you next week, hopefully. Have a great flight. Take care, guys.
The great Frank Del Tufo confirming what we all believe.
Please. He didn't confirm anything.
That you're fast. You would have been fast, but Lawrence Taylor fast? Get out of here.
Frank and Chris Brockman could be twin brothers.
But they're not.
They never admit anything. Yeah, they could be.
But he's your brother.
Yeah, sad.
Like the Bengals, you just need to tweak the story a little bit. Just fine-tune it. You don't need an overhaul because you're fast. Anyway. Just tweak it. That Lawrence Taylor would attract you down. Nope.
Here's what confuses me. confuses me. Brockman, you can attest to this. We always hear Del Tufo's story, and I know this because he's put it on Twitter 100 times. As a kid, he wasn't athletic. He didn't play, so he liked to sit there and record the guys playing, and he started to mix, right? Now, all of a sudden, you're an athlete,
track. No. I have never said I'm an athlete. I am as far from being at my scholastic abilities are that of the worst person you've ever seen play a sport.
Yeah, and you said that multiple times, and now you believe that Lawrence Taylor...
That I could do very well, run and roller skate. And I will have a billion witnesses tell you, I was the best roller skater in my rink, like literally, when I was a kid.
Did they give out trophies for that?
Yeah, I used to win races and be put a half lap. My brother Frank was the same. He actually used to get put back because he skated with me. We'd be put back a half a lap behind people and still beat them in the
race. What was the top 40 disco song at the time when you were doing that?
Back then? I mean,
What disco song got you skating the fastest?
Disco Duck by Rick Dees.
Oh, so many songs. I got too
Rick
many.
Rick Dees
Rich.
Nuts?
So many songs.
Which there was so song, many. When it came on, you're like, I am going to skate like the
wind.
Well,
we didn't skate fast. All the music back then was kind of slow, like, R&B music. I mean, come on, I got...
This entire venture and conversation is just one small gear away from being just the best gear possible. We've just missed that gear,
Frank... You didn't miss the gear. You busted my chops, and I at the end of the day, my brother... Didn't really corroborate my story. He did say I was fast. He actually said the lie.
Somewhat corroboration.
But that was fast.
But Christopher, in front of a jury, the jury convicts within 5 minutes, right?
Of my peers.
A jury convicts within 5 minutes.
Convicts what?
Is the story to be false?
No. Yeah, probably.
No.
The jury does not find for the defendant.
I don't believe so. All it takes is one, though, Rich.
Yeah. Well, I could get one.
All it takes is one.
Mike Del Tufo is presumed slow until proven fast. In this court of law, we're convicted.
Mike, you'd have to really, like...
There'd be no way to prove this.
But we'd have
presumed
to run down
slow
your,
until
run
proven
down your
fast.
Track coach.
Yeah, you're
no way
not
to prove it.
We'd have to run
Mr.
down
Miyako
some former
probably
teammate.
Still alive. He probably still coaches the track team at Senior Prep.
The problem is that we could get LT on the phone.
Oh, yeah, and LT's gonna put. I mean, it's
please, like Lawrence Taylor, who's, yeah, who's never heard of Mike Del Tufo is gonna be
LT's club. I DJed at LT's club.
You just like gave a point.
So,
like,
there you go.
Hold on, last
There's
thing, last thing.
Separation.
LT, you're claiming
no,
LT remembers
LT
you.
LT will never remember.
Okay, very
me.
Good.
All right.
Not a chance. Right. I will not
very
even
good.
Go there.
This is.
I know
fun.
Now. From now on, the way I got to do this, I got to stop.
Tell the truth.
No, I got to stop. No, because I always do. I've proven you guys wrong enough. But at the end of the day, I got to stop and then reevaluate how I... My problem is I say something too fast.
Well, your mind moves...
And my mind moves faster than my mouth. Yes. And what happens is when my mouth gets in... I'm sorry, my mouth moves faster than my mind.
I was about to say, your mouth moves
and
very fast.
What happens
fast.
Is when
he's
I
got
do
trouble
that,
with speed.
It sounds like I'm embellishing or lying. And it's I'm actually not. And a lot of my friends will tell you that that's one of my biggest problems. Even when I'm like explaining something to somebody, if I just went... and paused, I'd be way better.
Dude, we love you. We know exactly who you
are. That's
what I am. We know exactly what you mean. We know exactly what you're about. Let's take a break. When we come back, Tiger Woods has spoken. Tiger Woods, y'all, when we come back on the Rich Eisen Show.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Al in Dallas back here on the Rich Eisen Show. Albert, Al, I know you want to chime in on this. Al. What's up, Al?
Well, no, this is Tommy Del Tufo from Freehold.
Well done.
I love it, Al.
Mike could roller skate like the wind. He wore leg warmers, and he had those four-wheel skates with the stoppers. It was unbelievable.
Right? Isn't that right?
Yeah, I did. No stoppers.
What do you think?
No brakes. No stoppers.
He's out of his mind, Richard. I mean, he's losing it. I can run faster than Lawrence Taylor. I mean, the stories, these are awesome. Well, this is what you get from a four-time Emmy winner.
Ladies and gentlemen. Six. Come on. Don't cut him short.
Don't cut him short.
25 or 28 nominations.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Well, Al, love you, brother. Thanks for chiming in and calling him as nuts as he is. There you go. There's Alan Jones.
Al's done.
Josh in Omaha. What's up, Josh? You'll take your call.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hope you guys are well. I am currently sitting with my class. They're taking semester finals today, so I'm a high school teacher in Nebraska. So
okay,
I figured I'd call. So I was wondering what your thoughts are on if Tiger Woods actually has a chance this weekend. And then also, my brother and I have a podcast, and we grew up watching you on ESPN on SportsCenter. And I figured I'd kind of shoot my shot and see if you wanted to be on. We'd love to have you. It's kind of about sports and life. So if you're interested, we'd love to have you on.
Okay. Sounds good. I'll say this is the way it's done in Los Angeles. I'll say yes to you now and then not call you back.
Okay.
No. Seriously. No. Hold on. We'll put you on hold and put it.
That's a DM, yeah.
Yeah. No, put you on hold and tell your number to Adam. We'll figure it out. Okay?
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much.
You got it, bud. You take care. That's our friend on Josh in Nebraska.
That is the L.A. move, though. Oh, yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, of course. We'll make this happen.
Okay. The actor's name.
Did you find it?
Carmine Caridi. He passed away in 2019. He played one of the Rosado brothers, and let's make sure that
Good
I got this
job,
right.
Rich.
That he's in, he did Jake and the Fat Man, Murder, She Wrote, so you know I got this right. Yeah. Night Court, Simon and Simon, Summer Rental, Hill Street Blues. He had to have done this. Where is...
Yeah, I was looking.
Well,
too.
I just looked. The engineer from the You Got the Touch, You Got the Power. I was right. That's Sean Penn's brother.
Yes, that's Michael Penn.
That's Michael
right,
Penn.
I saw that. I can't find the producer.
You Got the Touch.
That's it.
You think the bass is taken away from my voice?
Wait.
You Got the Power.
Is the bass...
Okay, Tiger Woods spoke today in advance of playing in the PGA Championship. Let's check out what he had to say. He was asked if there was a lull between the Masters and this tournament, as we know, it's been about a month. Guess what he had to say.
Between the PGA Championship and the Masters, were you able to sort of keep ramping up the training, or was there a post Masters lull?
Yeah, there was a huge lull Monday. That was it. Monday, it was not fun. It hurt a lot of ice baths and. Just trying to get the swelling out of there. And then we went back at it leg day on Tuesday, and we kept going from there and said, let's go. You know, we figured the first mountain you climbed was Everest. I mean, that's the steepest golf course you're going to play. And that was the first one you climbed. And so it's going to get flatter and better. but still, I still have tough days, and things aren't going to be as easy as people might think. But I feel like I'm doing better. I'm having more days in which are better, more positive. Able to practice a little bit longer, so I'm able to do activities and things that you know, I was hoping to do, and I'm finally able to do them.
Hey, man, it's just like,
let's go, baby.
There's no days off. When you're his age, coming back, you have Monday. That's it. Yeah, you know what I did? You know, I did what I did at the Masters, and this is what I did. Have you seen the final season of Ozark? Oh, my goodness. You know what I did? I just sat on the couch. That's all I did. You know, let me tell you something. You think this physique just makes itself? I'll tell you what. Hot pockets. That's my secret.
What are you going to pick?
He looks yoked.
I mean, Tom Brady and Tiger Woods ain't stopping at all.
Can we just talk about the group that he's in? This group is phenomenal. Spieth, looking for the career Grand Slam. McIlroy, 2-time PGA winner. Tiger, 4-time winner. Let's go.
Let's go. I'm with Brockman.
9:11 Eastern time on tee number 10, Thursday.
So it's nice and early. Oof. Get
early
going.
On the West Coast.
But then on Friday, that means they'll go late. Friday, right?
Friday, they'll go late.
Yeah.
So that's Tiger. Man, that's probably like a 4 a.m. wake up for him.
Oof. Early.
Seriously, you got to get going. Stretch it out.
Yeah, he's got to get that body loose.
Popping Motrin?
I mean,
wasn't that a
we ended up going with that, right? Walking ibuprofen.
Walking ibuprofen, but yeah, that was years ago.
By the way, the first tee time, 7 a.m. local in Tulsa. Oh,
who's that?
John Daly, Sean McKeel,
Y.E.
Yang.
First tee time.
John Daly, you're gonna get John Daly's ass up at that time?
No way.
Is he just gonna stroll in from an Arby's? So what's gonna happen?
Who knows?
Strolling from an RV, it's gonna pop open, the smoke comes out like it's Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and he'll just stroll out. He'll probably tee up his ball on top of a beer can and smoke
boom,
it.
Boom, away we go.
John Daly's got that tee time.
7 a.m. hard time.
Damn. Give him a break. Let him sleep in. That'll wrap it up for this show. We'll chat Wednesday.